work with at the University of Pennsylvania. They have a website called Penn and Slavery Project, and it gives you a lot of
This is Robert Bickers of the Go-Betweens, and you're listening to 90.7 FM, WGXC, Accra.
Wavefarms WGXC needs your financial support. In these extraordinary and unprecedented times, we know there are many worthy organizations in need. We hope that you consider Wavefarm among them. If you value WGXC and want to keep it a part of your daily life, we ask that you make a tax-deductible contribution to keep local and adventurous content freely available on the Upper Hudson Valley radio dial. Please visit WGXC.org, click Donate, and become a monthly sustaining supporter, or make a one-time donation. Thank you so much for keeping independent voices and sounds on your radio dial.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518-622-9829.
Wavefarms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Delmar Wellness Center of Alachua, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
90.7 FM.
Accra, Hudson, Catskill.
UGXC 518-697-7400. Good Monday evening, everybody. Happy to be here to talk about your tech problems as the Borg tries to assimilate us all. So, Mid-Hudson Valley, I take the silence to mean that you have mastered technology, whether it's your computer, laptop or desktop, whether it's your cell phone, whether it's Zoom or the internet or the apps. Most people I know have always ended up with annoying little glitches, and I am here, and last week and next week, my smarter partner, Bill Collier, will be here to guide you through the breadcrumb trail of how to find the solution to your tech problems. Bill is the smarter one. I'm the better looking one. That gives him an unfair advantage on the radio. So he apologizes that he wasn't able to be here tonight. He's looking forward to hearing from you next Monday.
All right, we have our first caller.
Welcome, first caller. And who do we have here?
We have our first caller. Hello. Hello. Just got to turn off my radio. Okay, hello. This is Hank from Hastings.
Hello, Hank from Hastings. Is that
Hi.
Hastings on Hudson, by any chance?
On Hudson, New York, yes, sir.
Hank, when the candidates come to campaign in Hastings, do they call it hitting the Hastings hustings?
I guess we're going to find out. It's a good one.
I guess so. Well, Hank, what is your tech talk problem?
Well, I've had the same iPhone for at least 12 years, I think, now. It's an iPhone 4S, as in Sam. And I really hate to give it up, but AT&T is now telling me you have to upgrade, buy another phone. So my question for you, Ralph, is I really, really, really want to preserve my texts. I have years and years of text conversations that are irreplaceable and, you know, really a record of my life. And also years of voicemails. Some of the people who left messages are in the great beyond now. I would very, very much, I don't quite know what to do about preserving those things that are in my phone.
Okay, excellent question. I'm going to do more about pointing you in the direction where you're going to be able to find the answers rather than giving you the answers off the top of my head, because I've only done part of what you're talking about, and that is I have a bunch of voicemails that have been left on my phone by various celebrities and other VIPs that, even though they're really boring because they're famous people, I've wanted to preserve them. And what I did was I went to the voicemail message and I looked for the little prompt that showed me how I could email the audio file to my Gmail. And I did that, and then I was able to listen to it on my Gmail, and it worked like a charm. So I did this about 3 years ago, so I'm not going to be as helpful as you deserve in terms of telling you exactly what to look for. But I can tell you, once I figured it out back then, it was very easy and flawless to do. Hank, you have an iPhone. Do you have a Mac computer, or do you have an iPad?
I have an iPad.
Okay, that's very good, because one of the great things about Apple, probably the greatest thing about Apple that justifies their wildly inflated prices, in my opinion, is that they play, all of the different Apple products play very well together. And so your iPhone will natively talk and exchange iTunes and iPhotos and all kinds of different files with your other Apple products. So you could take it on faith, for starters.
That's tremendously helpful. That I can actually email each audio file to my own email, and then that keeps it safe.
Yes, but there are two other little hacks that I want to set you free to check out. And by the way, if it works, please call next week and tell me how smart I am. And if it doesn't work, you need not call next week and tell everybody how unsmart I am. So, you could just, if you have AppleCare, it's worth a call. I think it's probably 1-800-APPLCARE, but it'll be on the website. They will probably be very good about walking you through step by step through the process of how you can transfer one of these voicemail files or any of the other data on your phone. The second hack is that are you Verizon or AT&T or
AT&T.
Somebody else?
AT&T.
Okay. I don't know, but I suspect that there's an AT&T store near the hustings in Hastings, or fairly nearby, maybe in Poughkeepsie, or maybe in Yonkers. So if you find the local AT&T store, I've found that the people who work in these stores tend to be very knowledgeable about all the things having to do with data transfer. And there's a pretty good chance, I wouldn't guarantee because I don't want to be wrong and then break your heart, that when you trade in your iPhone 4 for a new iPhone, 10, 11, 12, whatever it is, that they will automatically transfer all the data in your old iPhone onto your new system. Can't guarantee that, but they will be able to tell you for sure whether that you can count on them to transfer that data reliably. Although I do recommend that you take those voicemails and you transfer them into either iTunes or your email so you can clear out your voicemails. And so you have plenty of room and you don't fill up your voicemails and all the people trying to call you up and give you millions of dollars and lots of love don't accidentally get locked out because your voicemail's full. And then if push comes to shove, if none of those solve your problem completely, then I promise you, I swear, inshallah, that there are YouTube videos that will tell you how to do exactly this, because there are YouTube videos about everything. So those are the various directions I'm pointing you in, Hank, from Hastings. And I hope one of them works well enough for you to call back in next week and tell me that I'm smarter than I look.
Well, thank you very, very, very much. You've given me lots to chew on. I appreciate it so much.
Well, thank you so much for calling in.
Okay. Good night.
Good night. Okay, we're rolling. So I know that there's a listening. FM is line of sight. And so WGXC is confined to those, what is it, three counties, Waveform, that your signal could reach. But that you are also, we are also streaming this on the World Wide Web. So we potentially have billions and billions, to paraphrase Carl Sagan, of listeners. And so anybody like Hank and our other listeners who are enjoying this show should absolutely text IM, DM on Facebook, or email their friends and tell them to tune into WGXC and particularly Tech Talk on Monday nights. So it's almost as if I heard a phone ring, but it's equally possible that I'm hallucinating. So I am here sitting outside Washington, D.C., where your tax dollars go to die. And I'm here to welcome, for the second week in a row, Alice from Albany, my hometown. Alice from Albany, welcome to Tech Talk on WGXC.
Hi, Ralph. Hello.
Hello, Alice from Albany.
Hi, Ralph. How are you?
Hey, Alice. Old buddy, old pal. Welcome
I'm
back.
I'm so sorry to hear about Bill.
Yeah, he's a great guy. He's so much smarter than me, but I'm so much better looking than he is. But that gives him an unfair advantage on the radio. What can I tell you? So I'm just gonna keep his seat warm this week, and hope to come up with a reasonably plausible solution for whatever ails you.
Oh, I don't really have anything that ails me. I just wanted to let you know that I read your book, the Webster's Dictionary, this last week, and I was very taken with the way that you really condensed how MoveOn.org became MoveOn.org. And so I have a question for you that's kind of a personal question for you. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on what makes a good website a good website.
Okay. Well, thank you. I wrote, I am indeed the author of the Webster's Dictionary, which some of our listeners may have heard of. My Webster's Dictionary has the subtitle of How to Use the Web to Transform the World. And 12 years ago, which is internet years are even longer than dog years. Every dog year is 7 human years. Every internet year is 100 human years. So we're going back the better part of a millennium here. I was even though I was a conservative, still am, even though I was an official in the Reagan White House, and even though the Washington Post once called me the second most conservative man in the world, I was very impressed by what MoveOn did during the Clinton administration and thereafter, because here were just a couple of people, a husband and wife, Wes Boyd and Joan Blades, and working from a very primitive laptop using a very primitive website, they sent out a message to a couple hundred members of their friends saying that Bill Clinton had done something wrong, but it was a little thing. It was a minor thing. This was his dalliance with Monica. And the Congress should, instead of impeaching him, Congress should censure Clinton and move on, because there were more important problems facing the country, which was sure enough true. And they sent this out and had people write them back and sign the petition and give them their email address. And their friends did this, and their friends sent it around to their friends. And before they knew it, just in a matter of weeks or a few months, they had an email list of 500,000 people who thought that Washington was going off in the wrong direction by trying to impeach President Clinton, and that they should give him a slap on the wrist and move on to more important things. And so the Democrats were not really defending Clinton. The Republicans were hounding the daylights out of him. So I just wanted to figure out how they did it, how they managed to recruit these people and then help to guide these people as peers, not as minions. So I just went to the internet. I went to Google. I started looking up all the articles that I could, because there was no book on the subject. There were very few articles about it. All of the information was just like sprinkled around. So are you still with me, Alice from Albany?
I am. I'm captivated.
Well, I was captivated too. And I actually, I knew MoveOn's political director, who was based in Washington, D.C. MoveOn was sprinkled all around the country. They had remote work before the pandemic set in, before it became a cool thing. And she wouldn't tell me any state secrets, but little by little, I just used my detective powers to figure out exactly what they did and how they did it. And I put together what I called the Webster's 10 Laws about best practices creating a movement using the web, a transformational movement. And then I just wrote it up. I got a grant from Searle Freedom Trust, and I wrote it up into this little book, which you can still get at Amazon.com, the Webster's Dictionary, How to Use the Web to Transform the World. And I wrote the book to try to teach the conservative movement how to do it, how to do what the progressives had done. And the sad news was none of my conservative friends wanted to listen to me. It was just like alien to them. We conservatives way back in 2008 were still communicating by telegraph and tom-toms and smoke signals and semaphores. And this whole internet thing just seemed really unreal to us. And it still seems really unreal to most of us, although I'm unusual that way. So, but MoveOn loved the book so much, even though I was their inveterate enemy, even though we were at political warfare with each other. But I wrote the book very respectfully, no snark. It was kind of like those World War I fighting aces who would try to be shooting each other down, but they would be saluting each other when they did. And they loved the book so much, they made it into their training manual for 3 years, 3 or 4 years at the height of their powers. And the founders, Wes and Joan, invited me at my request. I was seeking an invitation through their political director, Elise Hoag, who's now the head of NARAL, to visit them when I was going to be in the Berkeley area. And they invited me into their house, and it was very charming because here were these two people. By now, MoveOn was now a million people or more, and they were trying to keep the United States from going, from invading Iraq. They'd moved on from protecting Clinton from impeachment, which he was impeached, but he was acquitted. They merged with Eli Pariser's 9/11 piece, and they had now a million and growing people who were trying to keep the U.S. from invading Iraq. And here are these two very nice, unpretentious people who would bicycle around Berkeley, drive their daughter Robin to her cello lessons in their station wagon, and play soccer with the same people who they had been playing soccer with ever since high school. They made a small fortune with the flying toaster screensaver in their day, so they were at leisure, but they were just the nicest people you could possibly imagine. And by the way, when they were running MoveOn.org, they were militant. They took strong stands, but they were always decent. They were forever decent, and I love that about them. And so the bottom line is we natural born enemies became friends, and I've remained, Wes is an introvert, so I don't interact with him very much, but his wife, Joan, is a lovely person, and we're telephone buddies. And then my book won the most prestigious international award, the Trophée du Choix des Internautes from the World E-Democracy Center in Paris. And so I became known in political circles as the Webster. So that tells you, it's a really long-winded wind-up to give you the context to answer your question about what's
Thank
a good
you
website.
So much. Thank you. I didn't really understand all of that.
Okay, which part was I particularly obscure about?
You weren't obscure. I was saying that from reading the book, I didn't understand the background of it, so I appreciate that you've given that to me here.
Well, Alice from Albany, if you wanted to lead a million-person movement, you know, for instance, to reclaim Vermont for Albany County, because remember, Vermont is an illicitly breakaway portion of Albany County, should not be recognized as a state. So if you wanted to recruit a million people to help reclaim Vermont for Albany County, it's all right there in the Webster's Dictionary, how to use the web to transform the world. It's not complicated, actually. The web, and it's a lot easier now than it was in 2008, because you can set up your own website on GoDaddy for about $5 a month for in about an hour. It's just all plug and play. So it's just gotten easier and easier. But what you have to have is a cause that you're passionate about, that you can persuade other people to be passionate about, and that you can invite them to join your list, sign up with their email address, and then they will trust you, if you prove trustworthy, to coach them and to tutor them about how they can become effective in advocating for their cause. Because a lot of people, they feel strongly about something, but they really don't know how to be effective with it. And it turns out that, you know, it's really powerful to write to your congressman. And it's really powerful if you can get a dozen or two dozen of your friends to write to your congressman or congresswoman. And it's really, really powerful if you can get a group of people, maybe even dozens, who will pick up an issue and stay with that issue consistently week after week and month after month, and propose in a very respectful but forceful way, tell your congressman or congresswoman what it is specifically that bothers you, and what it is specifically that you want them to do. Because we all think the congressmen are some kind of superpowered superheroes or superheroines, and there's an element of truth to that. But the one thing that they sure can't do is to read your mind. So if you have a national issue that's relevant to the jurisdiction of the Congress, and you really want them to do something about it, Alice from Albany, you would be shocked that if you could pull together a group of friends and stay coordinated and stay articulate and write your own letters in your own words to your own congressman, who you can find out who he or she is on the web very easily, and you just write to them. You get a dozen people writing every month saying what it is that you want and why you want it and what it is that you want them to do. You would be shocked at how hard they will work to please you unless they're getting counter pressure from the other side, which is, except for a few hot button issues like guns and abortion and other values issues. Okay. Mostly the congressmen never hear from their constituents about what the constituents care about. And they love to get on those cases if you'll only tell them what you want them to do, why you want them to do it, and how you want them to go about it. They live to serve. So that is kind of that is a great, I've given you the bones of a great advocacy website. There are all different, there are as many different kinds of websites as there are cable TV channels. So a great advocacy website will channel you, will help you channel your efforts by making it really simple and cutting through all the red tape and showing you how to be effective on whatever cause they are advocating and whatever cause you want to advocate on. So you go to Google, you find the website that is pushing for justice to be done in that area, and a good website will be very simple. They'll tell you who they are. They'll tell you, including the names of the staff. They'll tell you what their cause is, and they will show you and tell you and educate you how to advocate that cause so that in about 5 or 10 minutes, you can become a really effective citizen. And I wish I could tell you, I wish I could give you a list of really great websites that do all that, but surprisingly enough, there are very few websites that actually do all that. Most of them overcomplicate this and are out there trying to educate you rather than trying to help you exercise your citizen power in simple and effective ways. So that's for advocacy websites, which was my specialty. I've learned more about other websites as well. So great websites are designed according to the principle of keep it simple, sweetheart. And if you want to see my website, I've got two. I've got a cause website called thecapitalistleague.com because I'm a right-wing capitalist, don't you know? But I'm against cronyism as much as I'm against or more than I'm against socialism. And so on the website that I set up in about an hour, thecapitalistleague.com at GoDaddy, I just took their stock photo imagery, which is license free. You can also upload your own pictures. Don't upload other people's copyright pictures or you're going to be getting a very mean note from a lawyer that's going to demand thousands of dollars from you. But if you use your own imagery or if you use licensed imagery that's resident on the site or public domain imagery that comes from the government, NASA or whatever, you're fine. And we put together on our website a way to sign up for our weekly newsletter, weekly bulletin called Universal Opulence. We set up the 10 commandments of capitalism, and we set up some background about what our ethos is and what our philosophy is and why they should care and how we could help make them effective. Now we then pivoted around to Facebook, which is a platform. And a fantastic platform. Alice, do you have a Facebook account?
I do. Thank you. I do.
Good. And do you have Facebook friends?
not as many as you'd like.
Well, quality trumps quantity. But who are your how many Facebook friends do you have? Dozens or hundreds?
No, I have a few hundred.
That's a goodly number. And whether, and there's two, there's something I want you to know about Facebook. If you want to start a movement, you have to start what's called a group page or a fan page, because the personal Facebook pages, you are only allowed to have up to 5,000 members, and then you're capped. You can't have any more. But if you have a group page or a fan page, you can have an unlimited number of followers and likers. So over there at the Capitalist League, we opened up a Capitalist League Facebook page, and we now have over the last 2 months, we've grown that from 5,800 people to 119,000 people, and we are on our way to growing it to 1 million people. So if you would like to have 1 million followers, the easiest, most powerful, most effective way to do it nowadays is to create social media followers by building your following on Facebook or on Twitter or on Instagram or on Pinterest or on Snapchat. But I would say that the most important social media platforms to build your following on are Facebook and Instagram. And by the way, you can tell the people, your followers on Facebook, you can invite them with your postings there to come and sign up at your own website so that they start subscribing to your free weekly or monthly newsletter. So you can do all of these things at once, and you can do them rather easily. And you know, it's very important on Facebook or Instagram that you regularly post fresh content. If you don't post at least 3 times a week, preferably 5 or 7 times a week with interesting content, then people don't really have a reason to keep coming back. But if you're constantly posting links to new articles that you found on the internet or blogs that you've written or pictures that you've taken, then people will like the steady flow of fresh content. And if it's arranged around your cause, the theme of your cause, it's a great way to grow a movement. So I think that's a long-winded, roundabout way of saying Facebook is a terrific, it's a terrific website. You don't think of it as a website, but it is. We call it a platform, but it's built on the web, and it's just a very, very highly, highly powerful way to make your voice heard and to connect with other people. So you got the Webster's, you've got CapitalistLeague.com, you have Facebook, and you have Facebook, the Capitalist League Facebook page. And by the way, another great thing about Facebook is it's free. They are willing to provide you with all this cool capability, and what they get in return is they get to figure out that what they get to tell advertisers who, not by name, but who in general by group would be interested in buying their products. This is like the Nielsen ratings on steroids. So the advertisers do not want to be trying to sell icicles to Eskimos. They want to be selling icicles to Californians who are now going through a heat wave. Okay. And so by giving them information about you or data, then that makes them a very valuable advertising platform, because they can tell the companies that want to advertise to you, whether it's magazines or whether it's socks or whether it's, anything that's out there for sale, who is most likely to buy what they're selling. That's really valuable information, so they're not wasting their advertising money. And it's valuable to you because you'd rather people be advertising things to you that are really interesting to you and stuff that you might actually consider buying. So it's win-win-win all around, and you get this great platform that you can do these, that you can build 1 million person following on for no cost. And so all around, everybody wins. If you want pure, beautiful websites, go to places like Apple, the Apple website, apple.com. They're one of the most beautiful design companies in the world. And they are into making the consumer electronic products elegant. Well, their commitment to elegance bleeds through onto their website. So their website is just beautifully designed. And if you want to see what a beautifully designed website looks like, go to Apple. But they're not alone. If you go to Ford Motor, Ford.com, they have spent millions of dollars making their website beautiful. And why should you have to spend millions of dollars making your website beautiful? Just go to their website and copy their design principles. But I will say this, that one of the most magnetic, compelling, mesmerizing images that you can possibly put out there is you, the face, people's faces. People like to look at people's faces. It's why Facebook is one of the secret sauces why Facebook is so successful. So I really recommend that for your website, you make yourself the heroine of your own website with pictures of you, maybe by the Erastus Corning Building Tower in downtown Albany with, you know, cool backgrounds, or the New York State Capitol Building, or maybe you want to go to Thatcher Park so you can see Albany in the background as a little brigadoon, beautiful little jewel of the city over your shoulder. Think beauty, think elegance. Make yourself the heroine, or for our male listeners, the hero of your own heroic narrative. Come up with a conflict that you are going to be the hero. You're going to be the hero. You're going to have a villain. You're going to have high stakes. You're going to have a challenge. You're going to tell that challenge, not show that challenge. You're going to tell that challenge in a dramatic, emotionally engaging way. You can do that on your website. Tell your own story and make sure it's a compelling drama. And then people will like it. And if you keep updating the story, taking the story out further, providing new plot twists, if you will, and new color, then if you do that on a regular basis, people will have a reason to keep coming back. And that's how you would grow your own website into something really powerful and magnificent. Well, that was another long-winded answer, Alice. back to you.
Thank you. Bye.
Oh, bye. Call back next week and tell me how smart I am. Okay, here we are still somehow miraculously on Tech Talk, WGXC, and I think what you want to do is call 518-697-7400 or 518-622-2598. Once again, 518, it's the Albany area code, Be Still My Heart, 697-7400 or 518-622-2598. Call me up and let me know what technological mysteries are pervading your life, what glitches you've come across, what gremlins are halting your computer, or what specters are haunting Europe. WGXC Tech Talk, Ralph Benko here, waiting for your calls. Our faithful listeners, billions and billions of potential listeners across the internet. Well, I'm guessing that so many people are trying to call in at the very same time that it's blocking the phone lines. But don't give up, faithful listeners. Do not give up, faithful callers. You will see, if you just keep going, be persistent, dial those numbers, and your virtue will be rewarded.
it's been a very interesting week in technology. We see the president of the United States demanding that TikTok sell itself off. It's one of the great big apps. And also, TikTok is going to war, if I read this correctly, with Google and with Apple, because Google and Apple have the dominant app platforms where people put their apps so that they can come to the attention of millions of potential downloaders and buyers. And I believe both the Google App Store and the Apple App Store are the dominant marketplaces for this. And they have rules against their apps selling their own upgrades and does an app get a doodad directly within their own app? They want all that stuff to be sold through them. So the feisty little $10 billion TikTok is now trying to bring antitrust actions, basically saying, you can't do that to us. And I am not so hip as to be on TikTok, but apparently it is the I'm confusing TikTok with Fortnite. It's Fortnite that's going to war with Apple and Google, and apparently Fortnite is the hottest place to be in the universe if you happen to be a tween or a teen or a young millennial. And so they've been wanting to sell things inside their game, and Apple and Google block them, and now they're fighting it out in court. I am not a believer in federal regulation of the internet, which has done just fine for itself. The web is 26 years old, and it has thrived without good old Uncle Sam meddling and telling people what to do. Bringing antitrust, the Justice Department or the Attorney General or the FTC, bringing antitrust actions against the great tech companies makes no sense, because antitrust monopolies, we're against monopolies, because if you have a monopoly, then you can raise your prices and gouge the customers. Well, all of these companies, all of the big data companies like Google and Facebook, are giving you their services for free in return for the opportunity to tell advertisers what you're interested in buying. They have data about you that is data that you shouldn't mind them having. So free is not exactly gouging the public. And so I have been writing occasionally in my Newsmax column about why it would be just a crime for Uncle Sam to be pistol whipping our great data companies like Google and like Facebook. America is the preeminent technology company in the world. And why we would want to crush or even damage our most successful tech companies, China has already thrown down the white glove, slapped us in the face, and said publicly, President Xi Jinping gave a speech last May saying, no, we, China, want to be the preeminent technology company in the world. And why would we be crippling our own technology industry, whether it's Silicon Valley, Google, whether it's Seattle, which is where Amazon is? Why would want to be crippling our own great, great tech companies, would just to pave the way for China to take the lead, which they're already doing with 5G, and they're already doing in a lot of other ways. Why we would want to make it easier for them to leapfrog us in technology and in the trillions of dollars of value the technology has brought to the United States and the millions of high-paying jobs
why we would want to damage that is beyond me. And it looks to me like we have another lucky caller, Denise from West Palm Beach. Denise from West Palm Beach, welcome.
Hi. Hello.
Oh, hey, Denise, I'm sorry. Did I wake you up?
No, I'm wide awake.
Oh, good. What are you drinking?
A really good Chardonnay.
Yeah, it sounds nice. Pour me one, would you?
Yes.
Okay. Well, so what fascinating tech conundrums have you been pondering, Denise, from West Palm Beach?
So what I've been pondering is, so because of COVID, we're all home, and every meeting I go to is on Zoom or FaceTime, and everybody looks great except me. And I think it has to do with my camera in my computer. So I'm thinking I need a webcam.
Okay, well, webcams have become very inexpensive and very easy to plug in. I don't have one, but I'm guessing your USB port will do it. That said, I'm going to let you in on a little secret. Are you ready?
Okay. Are you sitting down? I am sitting down.
Okay. Are you getting ready to toast me with your glass of, Chablis?
Yes, I am. Chardonnay.
Okay.
Chardonnay.
Okay. Uh-huh. Okay. 90% of the secret of looking good in a photograph or on video, streaming video, has to do with the lighting, not the camera. Cameras are virtually interchangeable now, but the lighting is crucial. And so, for instance, professional photographers invest... They have a camera, but if you ever go to a photo studio, you will discover that they have an enormous amount and variety of lighting and filters. And so they project the lighting. So it's indirect lighting, either by putting it through a gauze filter or bouncing it off the wall. Okay. So 90% of the trick of looking good on Zoom has to do with buying good, testing out different good lighting. And what you want is you want warm yellow light. You don't want harsh white light. So that, or you want natural light coming in, beaming in from the windows. But if you're using artificial light, stay away from fluorescent and glaring white light. Out of the other 10%, 9% is the background. If you arrange to put a good-looking background behind you, for instance, a wall of books, or it could be that you would hang a bedspread that has a particularly beautiful pattern on it or something. If you control the background and control the lighting, then the chances are you will be very happy with how you look. There's a few other tricks like the angle. You want to be close enough, but not so close that you get distortion. You want to be far enough away to give perspective, but so that you don't become like lost in your background, and you have a choice here as to whether you want to direct your camera straight on or at an angle. I don't know this except for as a Hollywood trope, but in Hollywood, if you look at the old movies, they will always talk about my good side. So it turns out that people have one side of their face tends to be more photogenic than the other. So I recommend that you get a friend or a sister or somebody to just let you play around with the lighting, with the background, and with the angle, and then to give you feedback, and preferably even to record you on Zoom so that you can see for yourself, and let them direct you, let them record you, and then you can look at the recording and decide which of the lighting, which of the various forms of lighting that you try out, which of the various backgrounds that you may try out, and which of the angles that you try out are the most flattering to you. So, Denise, I hope I didn't break your heart. Oh, no, I put her right to sleep. Oh, Denise, will you ever forgive me? Oh, what was that?
I snorted. I'm sorry. It happens sometimes.
I'm sorry. What happened?
I snorted.
Oh, you snorted. You did not snore. You squealed. I know the difference between a snore and a squeal. So now she's giggling. Oh, geez. You have a great career ahead of you radio, Denise.
But Tech Talk, my question is, do I need a webcam?
And my answer was no.
No.
Probably not.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
All right.
You need better lighting, you need a better background, and you need a better angle. So try that out and get back to us next Monday.
All right, I will, because my sister's coming soon. My sister's coming. I'm going to have her do all of this with me.
I'm sorry, say again.
That you said to have my sister come and test it out with me. So I'm going to.
Okay, good. Good. Yeah. We will be waiting here at WGXC on Tenterhooks to find out if our advice was any good or not.
All right. I'll let you know.
Okay, well, thank you. And looking forward to hearing from you again.
All right.
And then 518-697-7400, 518-622-2598. The lines are open. The billions and billions of people around the world who are fighting to call in with their question, now is the opportunity. Carpe diem, strike while the iron is hot. Tempus irreparabile fugit, as the divine Virgil said in the Georgian Odes. Well, we're doing a little recitation of John Cage's 433 now, I see. And for those of you who are not aware, it was right there in Woodstock about 50 years ago that the great John Cage that the great David Tudor recorded the great John Cage's most famous piece, 433, which was 4 minutes and 33 seconds of silence in three movements. And here we are, homage to John Cage. So, listeners, we've answered a few questions tonight. We've talked about TikTok and how the president has ordered them to be sold off to Microsoft for $10 billion, with a big cut of that going to the federal government. Frankly, I was horrified by all of that. We're talking about Fortnite's fight with Google and with Apple. And by the way, everybody who mistakes bigness for powerfulness, the big tech companies are all running scared, which is good for us, the customers, because they remember very well, even if we've forgotten, that IBM was considered the dominant, you know, the master of the computing universe forever, and it was, but not forever. Then came the Microsoft, and Microsoft, by providing the operating system for personal computers, knocked IBM off of its throne, and everybody thought that IBM was the commanding king, emperor,
of the marketplace, and would be forever, and it was until it wasn't. And then along came Google, and Google came and ate Microsoft's lunch with their Chrome browser and with their search functions, and they just picked up on a lot of really valuable things that Bill Gates overlooked. Now, Bill Gates retired as one of the richest men in the world and has been doing great stuff, curing infectious diseases around the world and so forth. Okay, but Microsoft was no longer the king of the world. And now Google's the king of the world. But Microsoft is still a trillion-dollar company. And by the way, as big and powerful as Google is, they're not the dominant figure in social media. That's Facebook. And Facebook remembers when MySpace was the dominant thing. And all of these people know and are working really hard trying to keep innovating to please us. Their position as market dominant, which is very different than monopoly, by the way, is much more fragile than it looks. And the big Godzillas just keep getting knocked off by the big King Kongs, who keep getting knocked off by the big giant robots. And this cycle keeps going, and it goes pretty fast. These people stay on top for maybe 20 or 30 years, and then some little upstart comes along and says, we have a better idea. And they raise a few million dollars, and they succeed, and then they raise a few hundred million dollars, and they succeed, and they become bigger and bigger until they're unstoppable. It's why Facebook paid, I don't know, was it $1 billion or $2 billion to buy Oculus Rift, which was a promising virtual reality helmet, because even though it didn't quite work, it was the best on the market, and it seemed like they could possibly, whoever owned it could get it to work. And if somebody other than Facebook were to have owned the dominant technology in virtual reality, it would have been bye-bye Facebook. So they could easily afford the $2 billion. So it was no skin off their nose. But it's also Google is doing all kinds of strange things. They bought YouTube because YouTube was the little company that figured out how to index video. And, you know, Google is the big index company. But somebody came along and threatened them, and therefore Google bought them out. Oh, I see. We have another caller, Michael from Portland, Maine. Michael from Portland, Maine. Come in, please. Over.
All right. Well, I have a quick question. It might not be that quick, but so I hear a lot about quantum computers, but what could you actually do with a quantum computer if you had a working one, or what would some of the applications be today or 5 years in the future?
Well, okay, let me tell you the sad story here, Michael. We have 1 minute, and you've asked a question with an hour-long answer. So,
oh, man.
Yeah, so just let me give you the tippy tip of the iceberg, and you can call in next week to Tech Talk and call in early, because it's a fascinating question, actually. And that is the weird thing about quantum mechanics is that something can be two different things at the same time, to oversimplify horribly. So you can take a beryllium atom and you can make it spin in opposite directions at the same time. You can cut a photon in half and send half of it across the galaxy, and then you take the half that you've kept in your hand and make it spin, and the other half photon that's quantumly entangled, that's now billions of light years away, will also start spinning around, even though there's no connection between the two of them. When you put that to work on computing, in theory,
Nobody knows if they can really make it work. You can make a computer that is a million times faster and more powerful than the current